Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you this morning?
I'm actually feeling pretty good.
You're looking pretty good. You look like you're dropping a few pounds.
Yeah,
there.
I lost the 7 pounds I gained on a Shangri-La diet. If you remember a while back, we had a guy by the name of Seth Roberts on. And he talked about his diet, the Shangri-La diet, and that diet.
He's got a book called the Shangri-La.
He's got a book called the Shangri-La Diet.
You can find it on our website.
And that particular diet, he talks about your set point and, what weight your body thinks it should be at.
And he basically gets you to have like a teaspoon of oil.
Yeah, you would have it. You'd have a couple hundred calories of oil in the middle of the day, or a couple hundred calories of sugar water in the middle of the day. Things that were flavorless, basically, but had calories and would fool your body into thinking that its set point should be lower and that your set point should be lower.
How's that diet working for you?
He said one of the things he said about the diet was that it would suppress your appetite, that this oil or this sugar in the middle of your day would suppress your appetite. Absolutely true. No doubt about it. The sugar water, the oil totally suppressed my appetite. Yeah, I don't eat because I'm hungry usually.
I'm emotionally dependent on food.
I happen to love food.
I run to food.
I have to say, very, very unfair. I went on the diet as I went on vacation. So, which is my license to eat freely and eat early and often,
Well, if anybody wants to see what Mark looks like having lost a little bit of weight, you know how some of those radio stations have the camera right in the studio and you can check onto the Restaurant Guys radio cam? Well, if you go to restaurantguysradio.com, you can check out what we look like in a 5-year-old picture. And it's there.
I think I really challenged this diet, and I did it on purpose. I did this diet in a way that I said, your average person is saying, okay, Shangri-La diet, okay, easy diet, fun diet, no problem. That's the way I did it. And I said, I'm going to eat whatever I want. I'm going to eat whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do this, and I'm just going to see if this particular aspect of it works. Well, I always gain weight on vacation anyway. So there was no, I can't really blame the diet for that particular thing. But while it served as an appetite suppressant, it did not serve as a retraining you to eat good foods at good times and
in the Tempest Fugit category of life, I keep trying to update that 5-year-old picture of us on the website. But it's funny, every picture we take is not as nice as
it does seem. Look, I'm a little older. Oh, what happened there?
I wish that I looked like that still.
There was one more tip that the book gave that I just absolutely refused to do, and he had a couple of tips as far as what you should do to accelerate the process, things that will make it easier for you to follow this diet. And one of them was to hold your nose while you eat. And so you don't smell anything. So
my mother taught me that's rude. And in a restaurant, by the way?
Exactly. Imagine me sitting in my dining room saying, oh, let me try the truffles. Oh, they're delicious. I don't think it's going to work.
And if you were a customer, I'd throw you right out.
Exactly.
Out the door.
And the only reason I'm holding my nose while I'm eating is if I'm eating tripe.
I have another bit of news. This was just reported. You know about the big wrapper deal with Cristal?
You talking about what, the packaging?
No. The DJ and the rapper. Cristal champagne is very expensive champagne. This was featured in a lot of rap videos. Mm-hmm. And
it was a it's a prestige champagne. It's not Cristal champagne is a very good champagne, but it's also a prestige champagne. You drink Cristal like people drank Dom Perignon, I think, 10 years ago or 20 years ago for prestige.
Right, and the Cristal is like, oh, it's Dom Perignon. I have a more expensive champagne than that. Anyway, it's a very good champagne. But check this out, Roederer, the guy in charge of Cristal, named Rizaud, they said they asked if the rapper's association with Cristal would harm the brand, and he replied. That's a good question. But, you know, what can we do? We can't forbid people from buying it. I'm sure Dom Perignon or Krug would be delighted to have their business. Speaking of the rappers.
Oh.
And so what Jay-Z, this rapper, said was, oh, yeah, they would? Well, maybe we'll go find a new champagne to put in our rap videos. Let me tell you something, okay? Cristal sales went through the roof
I'm gonna tell you
based
that
on the rap market.
That Cristal's prices doubled and became much more difficult to get for a high. And now we own a high-end restaurant where is the exact type of place that Cristal wants to be on the list. And I'm telling you, it became much more difficult for us to get.
Yeah. but it was because it was in the rap videos. And sure, maybe a lot of people bought it because it was in a video. That's product placement, you know. It's a great champagne to have on its own. But hey, man. Put my restaurant in a rap video, okay? Make me the place with the velvet rope and the line around the corner. I'll take it, and I will not insult you when I'm taking it, okay? So Jay-Z said he viewed this comment as racist. He's banned Cristal from his limousine and his rap videos. His new favorite fizz is a little-known champagne. Go, Jay-Z. Go for the small producer. Armand de Brignac Champagne. It's an ultra-luxury product. It comes in a gold bottle, which is kind of cheesy.
Yeah. And it's already in his new video, and it's already all over the place, moving fast.
Yeah, the producer is a family estate in the village of Chigny-les-Roses, and it may not be a big name, but it has a certain bling about it because it comes in a gold-plated bottle with a pewter label in the shape of the Ace of Spades. Whatever. You know, their ship has just come in.
Is the champagne good or is really all I care about?
But that's not what they care about in the video, and it just goes to show you that, you know, you got somebody buying your stuff. I mean, what a snooty thing to say.
I mean, they are French. They are occasionally snooty. I'm not sure if you realize this.
Yeah, the French do snooty really well. So they're out, by the way. And like I said, put me in a rap video. I'll be very, very happy to be in a rap video. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Charlie Palmer, who's joining us again. He joined us last year, and he's got a new book out, and he's got a new project in Las Vegas. He's one of America's top chefs, one of the most famous chefs, and he's a pretty cool dude. We'll be talking to him after this commercial. You're listening to The Restaurant Guy. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're back with The Restaurant Guys. Charlie Palmer has joined us before on The Restaurant Guys radio show. He's one of America's most respected chefs. Among many other successful pursuits, he's chef owner of Oriole in Manhattan, as well as in Las Vegas, as well as the Dry Creek Kitchen at the Hotel Healdsburg in California. He's got a new book out, Charlie Palmer's Practical Guide to the New American Kitchen, which we'll be talking about today, as well as an exciting new hotel that will bear his name rising on the Las Vegas skyline.
Charlie Palmer, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, how are you?
We're doing well.
We're
how
well,
are you?
Thanks. Hey, I got to ask you, I got a bunch of questions we want to ask you that we write this stuff down early in the morning.
Cristal, or what?
Yeah, that was what I want to start with. Now, if they featured you in a rap video, would you complain?
They put me in a rap video.
Yeah, if they're like the coolest restaurant in the world in the rap videos is Charlie Palmer's. You going to complain about that?
I'm not complaining.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, guys, those guys are a little uptight, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Only the French. Yeah, exactly. I don't want them to rough me up either. Never mind, stop coming.
They should be drinking Sonoma Sparkling, man.
Yeah,
there you go.
I think you should write to Jay-Z and put it in a gold bottle.
I'm gonna send a bottle to Jay-Z from some of our local sparkling out here.
I think that'd be very cool. He's in the market. All right, so, Charlie, since we last talked, you have a new cookbook, which I want to talk about, but you're building a hotel. Were you bored? What's that?
I could give you a number of different words to describe what the craziness is, but yeah, we're working on a project to build a non-gaming hotel in Vegas, and, you know, it's a really exciting thing, and I think it's kind of a natural next step for us as a company. You know, a small little company, but we have a hotel in Healdsburg, you know, in the wine country. A small hotel, 55 rooms, beautiful property in the wine country. And so, you know, people forget that I already do have one hotel, and, you know, it's been open for 4 years, very successful. We've been very fortunate to get some really amazing accolades from Travel and Leisure and, you know, Condé Nast Traveler and things like that. So
I actually stopped by for lunch. I was out there in August. I went to the opening of a winery out there, and I stopped by your place.
Great. I'm sorry I missed you.
Very cool. I was in, I flew in to go to the opening, Paul Hobbs opened a winery out there. I flew caught the red eye on Friday night, and I caught the red eye out on Sunday night. But I stopped by Sunday afternoon.
I know.
Don't we all need more time?
Yeah, exactly.
But your opening in Las Vegas is going to be a huge hotel, and they're not going to be. Why no gaming? Why no casino?
Well, first of all, I don't understand gaming. It's not my, it's not our business. We don't know that business. But I think even more importantly, Vegas has, progressed and changed so much, in the last 10 years, let's say, that I think there's a number of people, a lot of people go to Las Vegas for business or conventions or just for recreation that really don't have an appetite for gaming or gambling, And I think it really is the right time to do a property that, and I've seen this because of the Four Seasons and a couple other places, but it's very, very minimal, that, people like being in a non-gaming environment. They like all the excitement of Vegas and everything that's going on. And, of course, like I say, they may have to be there for business or conventions, but they really don't want to be immersed in gaming all the time. And I think, that's really the premise of this whole project, is to provide that environment, and really also, give people, the amenities and the service that they demand when they're not a big gamer, that kind of thing. At the end of the day, Vegas is still about gaming.
Yeah. The last time you were on a show, we talked a lot about the changing face of Las Vegas, and I think that there is a natural place for a non-gaming hotel or location big type of events to be happening.
Sure. And if people that will stay in our hotel also, I think, if they want to go out and gamble one night, great, but they don't want to live with it, the whole time.
You want to be able to come home without ever hearing ding, 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 ding.
Exactly. Well, no bling.
Yeah. but seriously, Francis and I ate at a restaurant just this past summer down in Atlantic City in a very nice restaurant. But you just couldn't help but hear the din of the casino floor in the background. Every time somebody opened the doors into the restaurant, there was a background noise that was disconcerting, honestly.
Yeah.
And incongruous, I think, with a great dinner.
Let me ask you, Charlie, about the Hotel Healdsburg is your first hotel.
Mm-hmm.
How does hospitality differ from a restaurant setting into a hotel setting? That would scare the tar. Mark and I looked at buying a hotel about four years ago. Scared the tar out of us.
Yeah, at first it was the same with me as we really have to learn the business. But when you break it down and you really look at it, it's really not much different. It's about taking care of the client. It's about making somebody happy and thinking of unique ideas and little touches that are going to, impress people. It's 4 years. I have to say that, 4 years later, I'm really comfortable to say that it's a really great hotel that we have. But, it took some time, too. Everything does.
When you talk about unique ideas, give us an example of what you mean by, just a thoughtful little thing, because it is those little things that differentiate you from other places.
Right.
What kind of thing would you point
to? Well, when you stay at our hotel, when you make a reservation, you'll get a call like 3 or 4 days ahead of time just to reconfirm if there's anything we can do for you. Like, for instance, if you want to eat in the restaurant in the hotel here is small, so we want to make sure the hotel guest has the option to dine there if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll call and say, and it goes into their itinerary when they make a reservation, because they're asked, and just double confirm that, do they want to eat in the restaurant? Do they want to have a spa treatment? Is there anything we can do for them as far as setting up a wine tour? Because, a lot of people are coming here for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they arrive, they'll have their itinerary printed out. So if they have a reservation at our restaurant or another restaurant in town, it's all printed out, what time, confirmations and everything like that. Little amenities like, storage of wine and everything that goes with the wine country when people buy wine and bring it back, and we provide shipping and everything for them, to handle that. We have a house car that will take them from winery to winery if they want.
I think, first of all, being one who likes imbibing a little too much wine, the house car sounds like a great plan for me. But when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Charlie Palmer about his new ventures in Las Vegas and service on the East Coast and West Coast with the Restaurant Guys in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Today we are proud to present Jackie Naylor.
Love me, leave me, left.
Once upon a time, New Year's Eve was a night for swank jazz, champagne, and caviar. Ring in 2007 at just such a gathering with us. The Restaurant Guys present a New Year's Eve jazz concert at the Crossroads Theater starring Ms. Jackie Naylor. Jackie's been called the new voice of jazz by Vogue magazine. Jazz Times says, in the never-ending Next Big Thing sweepstakes, bet on Jackie Naylor. She's headlined internationally. She's played with Michael McDonald and David Sanborn. And on New Year's Eve, she'll play to a sold-out crowd at the Crossroads Theater right next to our restaurants. Dine before or after the show at either one of our acclaimed restaurants. There are hotel accommodations within walking distance, one of the best jazz singers in the country, two of the best restaurants in the state, an evening not to be forgotten. Go to stageleft.com or Catherine Lombardi.com for details, reservations, and menus, or call 732-828-4444. Put the swank back in New Year's Eve. Spend it with the Restaurant Guys.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi, and we're talking today with Charlie Palmer.
You know, one of the things that Charlie just kind of glazed over is, you know, the restaurant in his hotel in Healdsburg is very small. And if you want to get a reservation there, you want to have dibs to get a reservation, staying in the hotel is one way, much like Inn at Little Washington is a way to get dibs at, in the restaurant.
Charlie, I'm leafing through my advanced copies of the Wine Spectator, and I saw an article that you did a menu sort of east versus west for Thanksgiving dinners, and you have restaurants on the East Coast and the West Coast, and now in the middle of the country as well.
Sure.
What are the differences, do you think, between the East Coast and the West Coast, in, as far as American cuisine is concerned, and how it's reflected in the menu?
Well, I mean, I look at it as like there's a little different mentality. I mean, I think a little bit differently on the West Coast from a food approach than I do on the East Coast.
We eat faster on the East Coast?
We eat faster. we probably eat more luxurious on the East Coast. But, you know, when you think about it, I mean, I'm not saying there's a huge difference. And, you know, once you land in California that you dine completely differently. But there's a different sensibility. And, you know, there is being, you know, after living here and spending half my time here, I should say, you know, for the last couple of years, you know, it's all about what comes in the back door of our kitchen at Dry Creek Kitchen. You know, chefs all talk about, you know, like seasonality and everything like that, but it literally comes to the back door because it all grows, you know, in a matter of, you know, 2 miles away. I mean, the guy that grows probably 60% of our vegetables is less than a half mile from the restaurant.
Whereas in New York, you're buying more from purveyors.
On the East Coast or in New York or even Las Vegas, you know, we create menus and then we source the ingredients. We create dishes and then we source the ingredients.
As opposed to going to the market and or seeing what comes in your back door and creating a menu from
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And it's just the opposite.
I think.
And as I'm talking to you, I got wild turkeys running around in front of my house.
Get a gun. Get a gun.
You know, every once in a while we have wild turkeys for dinner, and then I don't see them for a while, and then they come back.
Well, Charlie Palmer has written The Indestructible Cookbook, and if you want to find out what that's all about, you have to stick with us through the news, and we'll talk to him more on the other side. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Charlie Palmer. Among many other successful pursuits, he's chef owner of Oriole in Manhattan, as well as Las Vegas, and the Dry Creek Kitchen at the Hotel Healdsburg in California. His new book is Charlie Palmer's Practical Guide to the New American Kitchen. Charlie, I hear this book is indestructible.
It is.
What's that all about?
Well, this is the first ever waterproof cookbook, and it's, you know, for years I've been looking to actually find a publisher that we could do a waterproof cover and, you know, really make a durable book. And after doing many books that were big, beautiful, colorful cookbooks and, you know, kind of representation of what we do in the restaurants, I really wanted to do a book that was the answer to the home cook, you know, because I, you know, all the time, and I'm sure you guys are the same, in the same way, you get questions like, you know, how do I buy knives? You know, how do I, you know, mm-hmm. how do I become a better cook at home? That kind of thing. That for a professional chef, it's hard to like get out of your professional mode and really think about it in a different way. But
right.
I think this book really captures that because I take myself out of the professional kitchen and as the title says, from a very practical approach, you know, I explain to people how to be a better cook. You know, and when I say that, the front of the book, you know, there's a number of techniques that I think that can really make you a better home cook, you know, and that kind of thing. But the entire book is waterproof. I mean, you know, we display it in, we just did an event, we displayed it in a fishbowl with fish floating around it. We've had it in ice buckets, you know, floating in a bucket of ice and that kind of thing.
Well, the idea is that, you know, if you use the cookbook, you're going to get stuff on it.
Well, yeah, you've seen that over the years. I mean, you see people in their kitchens that, you know, it's wrapped in plastic wrap and it's got these, you know, that funky, you know, plastic shroud thing that they put the book in to, you know, so it doesn't get splattered on. This one, it doesn't matter. You know, just, you know, get some tomato sauce on it, you know, rinse it off in a sink.
Charlie, I'm going to tell you that my mother's joy of cooking was splattered with all
right.
kinds of joyful cooking things.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. I mean, do you think that most cookbooks today that people buy, I mean, you've had some other, like you said, beautiful cookbooks before, and it's my inclination that a lot of those beautiful cookbooks, like I picked up the Ducasse cookbook recently, mm-hmm. and
right, sure.
it's my inclination that those things sort of stay more on the coffee table or the shelf than they get opened
on
the kitchen.
Absolutely. And look, all of us chefs, we'd like to believe that people are going to really cook from these books, but the reality is, you know, unless they have a sous chef hanging around their house or a dishwasher too, they're not going to do it. And
right, mincing shallots doesn't happen for the average cook on Tuesday night when they get home from work.
Exactly, and you know that kind of always bothered me. That you know, I mean, I'd preach like, oh yeah, you can really cook from this book, and the recipes are really accurate, and they were. But the reality is, I know people aren't cooking from this book, and I think this book, to the contrary, I mean, everybody that's picked it up, I mean, whether it's you know really the novice or somebody that really, you know, looks to cook at home quite often. They really use the book, and I think, and I love that fact. I love that idea, and you know, it's really kind of a manual, take it into battle kind of thing. And people, once they get it in their hands, they start reading it, like, wow, you know, I can do this, you know.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's not going to be a book. I mean, I was watching a food show the other day, and the chef or the cook was trying to make you know quick food, but saying you know we can make quick food and make it taste good. Well, what they did was they poured tater tots on a tray and covered it with grated cheese, and I was like,
I think we all know who we're talking about.
Yeah, no, this is real cooking, and you know, like you know, okay, you know, it doesn't have to be a 30-minute meal, although mm-hmm. many of the recipes in this book could definitely be done in 30 minutes. You know, it's about you know really looking at cooking in a very practical way, you know, and improving your kitchen life. I talk about that in the book, you know, like. When you're cooking at home, there are ways to improve your kitchen life and make you proud of what you do. Because I don't think anyone, you know, everyone has that feeling when they do something well, whether it's cooking or anything else. They, you know, they're proud of it. And you know, and if they have guests over the house or you know, the in-laws are there, whatever, they can create something that's really good and really be confident that, hey, I can do this. And,
well,
and that's what this book's all about.
And I think also, I mean, you really touch on it in your book and in this book and in a couple of other books that I've seen out recently. The idea for cooking at home is, you know, some of these preparations of like how to, you know, chop and prepare a lot of the small ingredients and have ready at your fingertips, that's a lot of intensive prep work that we in professional kitchens with divisions of labor say, okay, well, you know, grab the finely minced garlic that's minced fresh to order. And that
right,
means,
you intern, pick all the beautiful blueberries.
Right.
You know, and unless you have maybe you could take interns at home. That would be fun. If
but
you get
the other care. Thing about it is I think when people cook at home, I mean, probably the bigger problem is thinking about who they're cooking for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, don't make squab for somebody if, you know, If you think about it, like they're not gonna like that, you know. Like,
you can make squab for me.
You know? Do the short ribs. Or, you know, do something. Hey, you know, Jackie loves this or he loves that. Well, make that. You know, mm-hmm. So you're already ahead of the game. And then the other big thing, and I think the real valuable information in the front of the book is about how to plan to buy, how to plan to do a recipe. You know, where you know, buy the pantry items, buy the stuff ahead of time that you can, and then buy the crucial ingredients, you know, for the dish that are perishable that day or the day before, you know. And it's really not a big deal. It's really common sense. Like, you know, most of this business is common sense. And if you think about it and you look at it that way, and the way it's mapped out in the book, it's easy to do.
My own particular metric, I think that's a very good idea of you know, think about who it is you're cooking for. And if, you know, you have a certain group of people coming over and, you know, say your boss is coming over and he doesn't like squab, well, mm-hmm. you know, he wants chicken, then you better not cook.
Or say your boss owns a really nice restaurant, right. And then you can make him squab because
right.
he really likes it.
What I was thinking is, I don't have a boss, so if you don't like squab, don't come over my house.
Yeah, well, that's true, too.
But it all depends on your situation, you know what I'm saying? Now, the thing in this book that you touched on earlier, and again, we're talking with Charlie Palmer about his new book, The Practical Guide to the New American Kitchen. You're teaching people techniques that you hope they'll use in other things after these recipes, techniques
yes.
they can take with them in the cooking in general in this book.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, techniques, common sense ways of, like, how to build a pantry, what can really make you a better cook, like things like sea salt.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe that sea salt can really make a difference. And what are you're paying, you know, a few cents more per ounce than regular salt, but, you know, that can really make a difference. Or smokehouse bacon, or, you know, good cheese, you know, good Parmesan
Mark,
as opposed to crappy Parmesan.
Mark and I were called in on a consulting job many years ago, and we had to be in there fairly quick, and they wanted some fast answers. And they would bring the food to us, and we would say, olive oil, salt.
Exactly.
Almost everything they brought to us is just olive oil, salt,
right,
and oil.
Finish the dish. All you have to do is finish this dish, and you're there.
Yeah.
And to have those things in your pantry at home, and I think this book is an excellent guide that gives you ideas for techniques, and also what we haven't talked about are the tools you need to have at home, because there's a world of gadgetry out there that, frankly, you don't need any of it.
That's the thing. I mean, I have to laugh. I mean, I've been in kitchens, like, you know, cooking in other people's kitchens, like auctioning. You know, they love to auction me off, and then I go cook in somebody's house or something like that. I try not to do it too much because it gets crazy. But, you know, I go into some of these houses. Like, I cooked in this house on Park Avenue a few months ago. I mean, I swear, there were things in this kitchen. I had no idea what they were for.
That's funny.
I haven't spent my entire life doing this.
Right.
You know? It's like, I'm like, what the hell is that thing, you know? And, the reality is that to be a good cook, you know, you really don't need much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you need a couple of good pans. You need a couple of good knives. I mean, that's another thing, knives. I go into kitchens, like, there's like 40 knives.
Yeah.
I don't even own 40 knives. I mean,
yeah.
What do you need all these knives for? You
need
a couple of good knives, you know.
You know, Charlie, they went to auction me off one day, and I went for $18.74.
No takers.
So I don't do that anymore.
And I had to buy them for the $18 just not to make them feel bad.
You say you didn't have a plan in the audience?
We'll be back talking with Charlie Palmer about his new book in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Economy Paver and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paver and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Charlie Palmer. We're talking right now about his new book, The Practical Guide to the New American Kitchen, which is a waterproof, almost indestructible cookbook. And if you want to find out how to get your hands on it, you can go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and we will put up a link so you can buy it, and we suggest it. So this is A Practical Guide to the American Kitchen. Charlie, let's talk about the title. The Practical Guide to the New American Kitchen. When you opened up Oriole in 88, at 28 years old, you were pretty much on the forefront of what we now refer to as American cuisine, or new American cuisine.
Right.
What is different about, you know, people who are serious cooks today who are engaging in new American cuisine, and what maybe... Let's talk about the cuisine, and let's talk also talk about in your practical guide to the new American kitchen how it differs from what maybe your grandmother needed in the old American kitchen.
Right. Well, I think when we really thought about the title of the book and describing what this book is about and kind of the sensibility of the food in general is, you know, I think where we've come, you know, with American food is amazing in, let's say, you know, the last 20 years, 25 years. I don't know if I would describe it as a cuisine yet, because I think, you know, I call it progressive American cooking, what we do, because I think, you know, cuisine, like Italian cuisine or French cuisine or something like that, it's something that develops over hundreds of years and could really be, you know, talked about as a cuisine.
And we don't have hundreds of years yet,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, and we're not there yet, but I mean, we will be, hopefully, and hopefully what we're doing in this country and what all the chefs are doing in this country will someday constitute a cuisine, but I think what I was trying to get across in this book is that cooking in this country and food in this country has come such a long way, and that we pull from all parts of the world. I mean, the flavors, the influences from all over, whether it's Asia or Europe or South America or wherever it is really coming together into something that we can call our own. And the American kitchen, you know, from the days of, you know, when I was a kid and, you know, the big loaf of sliced white bread and that kind of thing. I didn't come from an old Italian family where there was, a lot of the products were good or, you know, you pulled fresh greens out of the gardens. But, you know, when I was a kid, you know, we did have a huge garden. We ate all kinds of root vegetables and, you know, we grew our own sweet corn and, you know, carrots came out of the ground and that kind of thing, which was great. But, you know, it was all cooked in a very Susie Homemaker manner, you know, mm-hmm. And I think what we've done, it's a little more sophisticated, but it's really grounded in a good basis. And, you know, a lot of that comes from, you know, French classical cooking in my case, and, you know, in everybody else's case, it may be a little bit different. You know, if you grew up, say, if you're from an Italian family and you grew up aside, you know, cooking with your grandmother, that's the way, you know, that's the basis you start with.
How do you think we'll ever come to a cuisine? Because it seems as though, you know, because we call ourselves, one of our restaurants is a contemporary American restaurant, and one of our restaurants is an Italian American restaurant.
Right, sure.
It seems like almost all of our food, and our contemporary American restaurant is deeply based in French techniques, right?
Yep.
And we use local ingredients, of course. How do we achieve an American cuisine when basically almost everything we have and everything we are is hyphenated? You know, like Mark's Italian American and French American. I'm Irish American, and our food is, you know, it's clearly Italian American in the one restaurant. But even in our contemporary American restaurant, you can point to any dish and say, well, this comes from here, and that comes from there, and that comes from there. How do we become a melting pot rather than a salad bowl?
I think it takes time, honestly. You know, and believe me, I think about this a lot, and you know, I think, you know, my sensibility is because I really feel like I'm an American guy. You know, I worked in Europe. I worked, you know, a lot of different parts of Europe. But I always felt like I got to get home and I got to establish myself as an American cook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think a lot of that has to do with ingredients, you know, like using American ingredients.
We need to use more pawpaw. That's what we need to do.
we had Peter Hoffman from Savoy on the show just recently. He did a dinner with pawpaw, which is that American fruit that comes from the Appalachians, which is
right,
the,
right. Yeah. Well, you know, I still haven't like cozied up the fiddlehead ferns, but you know,
yeah,
American products. But you know, I think, you know, I mean, I think it's great that, you know, in this country you can, you know, like the movement with beef in this country, I think, is phenomenal. I mean, you know, to be able to look at what's going on and saying, okay, we can probably in the next few years easily get, chef-wise, you know, grass-fed, antibiotic-free, hormone-free beef.
And I think one of the things that's interesting, and I want to turn this back out to the listeners, I want to congratulate all of you because we talk about this kind of stuff all the time. And, you know, we've heard from our purveyors and people that advertise with us and people that have been guests on the show that they get calls from you saying, I want this, I want this, I want this, that I want grass-fed beef, that I want locally raised stuff, that I want organic stuff. And we chefs and restaurateurs and market people, we respond to that, because if you're out there saying, I want it and I'll spend my money on that rather than this,
sure,
that's the only way we can get it. And it's, I mean, the grass-fed beef has been a battle, hasn't it, Charlie?
It has. I mean, it's been going on for years, but I think there's really starting to make some movement. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's better for you. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think I'm a lost cause, you know, but my kids aren't, you know.
Yep. I have one more thing. We only have a minute left. I have one more thing I want to congratulate you for on this book. In the book, which I think this is a great development in American cuisine, you put wine recommendations for your dishes. What prompted you to do that?
Well, you know, I just think wine is such an important part of food. You know, every restaurant we have has a unique wine program. You know, everything from Oriel Las Vegas, which is probably the second largest wine program in the United States, to, you know, the little, like, Kitchen 22, which is a small list but a very unique and interesting list, but really focused on the menu.
I love that in the practical guide to the new American kitchen, you felt it that we were in a place for in a new American kitchen where we need to talk about wine. I think that's really great.
Especially
yeah,
American
really
wine.
Talking about the wines, the way I tried to do it was to get people, I think that's the way people should buy wine, by the way they feel. Like, you know, a big, lush Pinot Noir. Not a specific Pinot Noir, but when they go into the wine store, wherever they buy the wines, to describe what I like. You know, I like big, you know, lush Pinot Noirs.
One second there, Charlie. One of the things we like is Charlie Palmer, and we'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1155.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi, and that's the first time I've heard the Sneezy commercial, and I don't know that it goes so great with The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Charlie Palmer. We're talking about his book, Charlie Palmer's Practical Guide to the New American Kitchen.
So, Charlie, your hotelier, you know, all these other things, I can't even name them all. When's enough going to be enough? What's the ultimate goal? Do you want to be a huge, big business?
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, people ask me that all the time. Why do you do these things? Well, you know, why not? I mean, I'm doing things that I think that myself and my company should be doing. You know, and we're in a very great position as far as, like, we don't have to do anything new. But when I see an exciting project that I think, you know, it excites me to be creative. It excites me to be able to accomplish things and do something that's really meaningful and as well as good. You know, and hopefully be successful. You know.
Well, I have to say, I haven't seen your face on any flavor sprays or, you know, you have no bikini nightclubs yet. So.
Well, that's Dave's gig. That's not mine.
Yeah, I have to say, we have no intentions of opening a bikini restaurant, but I'm going to go.
Well, I love Dave. You know, Dave's a really good friend of mine. It's like, well, what were you doing that for? He's like, look at the babes. He's like, okay, all right.
Oh, my heavens. All right, quick question for you. How big is your organization for you? How many people are in your organization overall, and how many key people do you think you have, are the core people in your organization?
Well, we have we're at about 900 employees,
mm-hmm.
somewhere 900 to 1,000. I mean, we're just going through this whole healthcare thing, medical thing, so I know that. But I say, you know, me, you know, when you say key, I mean,
the key people.
You wonder. I mean, we have. Sometimes I wonder. I think probably the most key people we have are, like, you know, the busser, the busboy at Oriel, or
who set the direction.
Yeah. Well, I have a kind of a corporate team. I have a corporate chef. I have an in-house attorney that keeps me out of jail. I have.
How many people would you say that is overall?
CFO. It's about 12.
12. I think that's very, very interesting. And talking about how many people, you know, you can directly manage, and then you have those people manage other people. We have to leave it there because they're going to talk about the news and the election and all sorts of important stuff. But, Charlie, I want to thank you so much for coming and joining
us. Thanks, guys.
Again.
It's always great to have you on the show, Charlie.
Hey, continued success there.
Thanks,
we'll talk
man.
To you soon.
You
can Good luck in Vegas.
You can pick up Charlie's book on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Stay tuned for the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.